So we're reading from Abhidharma chapter 18, Pramaya, Veda Beda Tatsa. Om Maganatamarandasya Yanam Jana Shavakaya Aksuramutam Yena Asmai Sri Gurave Namaha Chi Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dati Sapadantikam Vanchakopa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from the Bhakti Center. Just wonderful things are happening here. I really, it's just developing so nicely. I'm so honored to be here with Srila Raghunath Swami. So we're following Rajanath. And as he's being educated in Krishna consciousness, we're being educated in Krishna consciousness. And he's found a guru, and his guru has explained Dashamula, which contains 10 instructions. The first one is about pramana, the means of evidence for the truth of what you will be saying. Then the verses from 2 to 8 are pramaya, what is to be known. Practically everything else is to be known, but then 9 is what is to be known is specifically. So 2 to 8 is sambandhagyan, which is basically a description of reality, which is Krishna and Krishna's energy, and an in-depth study of that. And verse 9 is abhideya tattva, what's the means of realizing reality, Krishna and Krishna's energy, which is about bhakti. And finally, the 10th verse is prayojana, what is the goal of the experience of realizing reality, which is prema or love of Godhead. So he's just so enthralled listening to this realized soul. So he's asking Rajanath, okay, I got to just plug in my phone just to make sure I have the right juice to finish it. I still have something, but I got to plug it in to get more. He's asking really, what is Gaura, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, meaning basically from Vedanta, what is his conception of this world? What is our philosophy of this world in relationship to the absolute truth? We know that Madhva is Dvaita Vipa, that it's completely separate. And then Vishnu Swami and Vallabha or Shuddha Advait, expressing more the sameness of it. It's real, but actually the material world is also the spiritual world. It's not different than the spiritual world. It's just our consciousness and relationship to it. And the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. It's simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different. So the eighth Dashamula kind of explains this, Achintya Beta Beta Tattva, and condemns what's called Advaita Vedant, or the conception that this world must be illusory, because if it's not illusory, it's a transformation of the absolute truth. And if the absolute truth is changing, it's not eternal or even real, according to that. Nasate vidyate bhavo, nabhavo vidyate sataha. What is changing is not real. That's basically. Gita also says that in a particular way. It says that things that are changing are nasate vidyate bhavo. They're not real. There's something there, but it's an imposition of our mind like, for example, the body is there, the soul is there, but to think that the body is the self, that's an imposition of the mind. That's the illusion. So there's a substance, but the transformation and change, especially material, if something is changing, it's not real. There's something real that's changing, or it's changing is not real, something like that. I'm not going to go any more depth into this because I'm not somehow at my best explaining it. But kind of to go on, somehow I wasn't clear about that. If I could explain it again later, maybe I will. So he explains this Achintya Beta Beta Tattva, and then he asks, what is this doctrine of Parinambad? Parinambad is Achintya Beta Beta Tattva, means that there's a transformation, but not of God, but of God's energies. And there's an example of touchstone turning something into gold. It never loses any of its potency. It always remains exactly the same. So that's a material example. But the example of the sun is also, the sun rays are coming, but the sun remains the same. Then he asks, what is Vivartavad? Vivartavad means that if we see things that are changing, then it means that Brahman is changing. And therefore, that must be illusion. But Parinambad, I'm repeating, you know, what we did. Parinambad means, no, Brahman is not changing. God, the energies is transforming. And then he asked, well, what is this Mayavadi? Mayavad means that Brahman somehow or other creates Bhagavan and God and the Jivas, but it's actually, it's created by its illusory potency. It doesn't really substantially, because once you have Maya, then you have Brahman and something else, and it's not one. So it doesn't really hold. And then he says, and we're up to today, is this in the Vedas? Found anywhere in the Vedas? And then Babaji says, no, Mayavad cannot be found anywhere in the Vedas. Mayavad is Buddhism. We read in the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda 43:6, Mayavadam asat shastram. In answer to questions by Umadevi, Parvati, Mahadev explains, O Devi, Mayavad is an impure shastra. Although actually covered Buddhism, it has gained entry into the region of the Aryans, disguised as Vedic conclusions. Kali Yuga, I shall appear in the guise of a Brahmana and preach this Mayavadi philosophy. So in the Padma Purana, Mayavadam Masat Shastra. But here in the Vedas itself, say it's covered Buddhism, as Prabhupada so aptly puts in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, it's a necessity, but not a permanent fact. In other words, it's not a truth, but it has some purpose. And that purpose is going to be explained here, but one purpose we know is that, you know, based on the Vedas, people were misusing it and using the parts of the Vedas that sanctioned animal sacrifice in a very limited and restricted way to, well, the wholesale slaughter of cows. Recently, Radhanath Swami was in some interview with
Robert Thurman,
Father Uma Thurman, that means anything. And he's the foremost authority on, academic authority on Buddhism in the world. And they were being interviewed by someone. He was trying to cause dissension between Radhanath Swami and Robert Thurman. And they asked Robert Thurman about something, and he, I forgot what it was, but I think Robert Thurman was explaining that he met some sadhu in Vrindavan or something, and he said, "We are so much appreciative to Lord Buddha." Robert Thurman was saying this, I can't quote it word for word. "We're so much appreciative of Lord Buddha because, you know, this is Vrindavan, the land of the cows, the place of the cows, and Lord Buddha protected and saved so many cows, so we Vaishnavas are very..." But then he said to Robert Thurman, "But then why do you eat meat?" And I think that's how he became a vegetarian. Buddhism is based on saving the cows, and then if you kill the cows, how can you be a Buddhist? "Vajranath Prabhu, why did Mahadev perform such an ugly task when he is the leader of the Devatas and the foremost among Vaishnavas?" Good question. Why did Lord Shiva, who is Vaishnavam Yata Shambhu, the topmost of the Vaishnavas, why did he preach this bogus philosophy? And then Babaji explains that Lord Shiva is Bhagavan's Guna avatar, and the supremely merciful Lord saw the asuras taking to the path of bhakti and worshipping him to get fruit of results and to fulfill their wicked desires. Just like Kamsa, he was driving the chariot of Devaki, and he was a demon, but that happened to be his sister. So he was doing it. And then the Devatas became very worried because he was serving a Vaishnava. He would get so much power from that, but he would misuse it. The Akashvani, the voice in the sky, said, "Kamsa, you are such a fool. You are such a fool," because they wanted to stop him from that type of power. So here also, there's some kind of explanation that people are taking to the path of bhakti to get fulfill their wicked desires because they get power. He then thought the asuras are troubling the devotees by polluting the path of devotional service, but the path of bhakti should be freed from this pollution. So he thought it was very, very serious that these misconceptions and misconceptions are entering into the path of bhakti. So, or who's saying this? One second. It's the Supreme Lord is saying this. And then he calls Shivaji and says, "Oh Shambhu, it is not auspicious for this material world if my pure bhakti is taught amongst those who are in the mode of ignorance and whose character is asurika. You should preach from the Shastra and spread Mayavadi philosophy in such a way that the asuras become enamored and I remain concealed from him." So he's saying, just to prevent bhakti from being exploited, he preached of a bhakti, a non-devotional philosophy. Actually, what that's the that's completely antithetical to bhakti. Those whose characters are surika leave the path of devotional service and take shelter of mayavad, and this will give my gentle bhaktas the chance to taste pure devotional service unhindered. You know, any organization knows that if people enter that don't share your values, it'll ruin the institution. You know, the best companies may have very strong vetting processes. And sometimes someone's very, very qualified and makes it to the last stage, and then they hire him and then realize that he just doesn't exactly share one's values, which is almost worse than someone who's against your values, because that becomes so overt. But someone who has similar values to you, but is wrong or has some misconception, he can cause great harm. I just seen this recently, that someone wrote an article, and I'm going to have to respond. Because they're so close in devotional service, but they have some misconception and some kind of disrespect for Prabhupada. But it's so subtle and so covered that it's hard, it's not easy for the ordinary people to detect. But they will become influenced. So that's worse. And even in a religious institution, there's kind of social philosophy, you know, that the worst thing is someone who's very close and you can't distinguish. But somehow Krishna wants to make this distinction so that bhakti will not be contaminated and those in bhakti will not be contaminated. I've never read this part. I don't remember reading this part. An interesting thing why Mayavadi philosophy was preached, to give the gentle bhaktis a chance to taste pure devotional service. In companies, good companies, the best companies, even if someone goes through the vetting process and they hire him and they see he's not right, they will spend thousands of dollars giving that person severance pay and, you know, in a gentle way asking them to go on. Because if that person remains in the organization, the demoralization will cause so much more problem and so much more money that they'd rather take a loss now. And I guess that's what Krishna was doing. Sri Mahadev, who is the supreme Vaishnav, was at first somewhat reluctant to accept such an arduous task with which Bhagavan had entrusted him. Of course he's reluctant. He has to preach against Bhagavan and the service of Bhagavan. However, considering this to be his order, he therefore preached the Mayavad philosophy. Where is the fault in Sri Mahadev, the supreme guru in this? The entire universe functions smoothly, like a well-oiled machine under the guidance of Bhagavan, who expertly wields in his hand the splendid Sudarshana Chakra for the well-being of all creatures. Only he knows what is auspicious is hidden in his order, and the duty of the humble servants is to obey his order. So you may not understand, but somehow you have that faith that there is something auspicious in it. Knowing this, the pure Vaishnav never finds any fault in Shankaracharya, Shiva's incarnation, who preached Mayavad. Listen to the evidence for Shastra from this. That he gives more how it's not a fault of Lord Shiva or Shankaracharya, his incarnation, who preached this, because there was a purpose. Even in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says one of the purposes is to increase the population, because it obscures the spiritual sex life of God, the meditation on which faith will completely purify your heart from lust. So by preaching Mayavadi philosophy, is also increasing the population. Vishnu said, O Shambhu, although I am Bhagavan, still I have worshipped different devatas and devis to bewilder the asuras. In the same way, I shall worship you as well and receive a benediction. In Kali Yuga, you should incarnate amongst human beings through your partial expansions. You should preach from shastras like Agama and fabricate a philosophy that will distract the general mass of people away from me and keep me covered. In this way, more and more people will be diverted away from me and my pastimes will become all the more valuable. And in the Varaha Purana, Bhagavan tells Shiva, I am creating the kind of illusion, moha, that will delude the mass of people. O strong-armed Rudra, you also create such a deluding shastra. O mighty arm, present fact as falsehood and falsehood as fact. Give prominence to your destructive Rudra form and conceal my eternal form as Bhagavan. The Bhartanath hears this and then he says, is there any evidence against Mayavadi philosophy? Babaji, all the testimony of the Vedas refute Mayavadi philosophy. The Mayavadis have searched all the Vedas and isolated four sentences in their support. They call these four sentences Mahavakya, illustrious statements. These four statements are. So what he's going to show now is that they took four statements, the whole Vedas, that seem to support their view when taken out of context and not understood deeply. So he's going to list what they are, and then he's going to describe the context in which they are spoken and how they don't actually refer to what the Mayavadis think they refer to, which is undifferentiated oneness. So these are their Mahavakyas, Sarvam, Kalabhidam, Brahma, all the universes, Brahma. Prajnanam Brahma, the supreme Brahma, knowledge is Brahman. Tattvam Asi Svetakato. O Svetakato, you are that. And four, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. The first Mahavakya, all the universes is Brahman, teaches that the whole universe consisting of the living beings and non-living matter is Brahman. Nothing exists that is not Brahman. The identity of that Brahman is explained elsewhere. There's nothing outside of Brahman, but what does Brahman mean? Everything, just like this verse, Vedanta tat tatva vigas tatva yajnanam advayam. Vedanta tat tatva vidas. What do they say, those who know the Vedas? Vedanta tat tatva vidas tatva yajnanam advayam. It's tattva is thatness, or that which exists, is advayam jnanam, which Prabhupada translates as non-dual substance. Other translations say non-dual consciousness, which basically means there's being or consciousness which nothing is different from. And I give the example, the hand, you point to the hand is the body. Point to the nose, what is it? It's my body. Everything is my body, but my hand is not my... Everything is my body is not everything. Everything is God, but God is not everything. My atatami dam sarvam jagat avyaktamurti. By my energy, I'm pervading everything, but I am not everything. Pradyumna, Prabhupada, Sanskrit pundit, was saying, you know, we really have to study Shastra. Why? It says jnanam, which means knowledge, but non-dual knowledge would not really make sense to describe reality. But because knowledge is cognizant of reality, then maybe non-dual knowledge means it's non-dual consciousness or awareness of which nothing is separated from. So what is this Mahavakya, Sarva Kalamidang Brahma, all the universes, Brahman? So first you have to understand what is that Brahman? And he quotes famous verse from the Svetashvatara Upanishads. Tasyasya karyam karanam chavidyate tatashamascha vyadikascha jushyate parasya shattai pibidhaya shuyate svabhavika jnanam balakriyacha. Svetashvatara Upanishad. None of the activities of that Parabrahman Paramatma is mundane, because none of his senses, such as his hands and legs, is material. Thus, through the medium of his transcendental body, he performs his pastimes without any material senses, and he is present everywhere at the same time. Therefore, no one is equal to him, what to speak of greater than him. The one divine potency of Parameshwara has been described in Shruti in many ways, among which is description of his Jnana Shakti knowledge, his Bala Shakti power, and his Kriya Shakti. Potency and activity are most important. These are called Chit Shakti, Samvit or Samvit Shakti, Sat Shakti or Sandini Shakti, Ananda Shakti or Ladini Shakti. He said, what is Brahman? Brahman is God's and God's energy. So he's saying, yes, every Sarvam Idam, at first, Mahavakya, Sarvam, Kalavidam, Brahma, all the universe is Brahman. Yes, because everything is Brahman. But what is Brahman? And here he's saying is Brahman is one who performs transcendental potencies, pastimes, who has energy. So it doesn't support undifferentiated oneness. All it says is that nothing is outside of the energies of God. And therefore, advayam jnana. Everything is non-dual. It's consciousness. It's non-dual substance. Everything is God. But God is not everything. That's a Achintya-Veda-Veda-Tatva. Brahman and his Shakti are accepted as non-different from each other. In fact, this Shakti is said to be inherent part of Brahman, which is manifest in different ways. From one point of view, it may be said that the potency is different from Brahman, so the potency and the possessor of the potency are non-different. Wait, from one point, it may be said that nothing is different from Brahman because the potency and the possessor of the potency are non-different. However, when we look at the material world, we can see that in another sense, Brahman and his Shakti are certainly different. He quotes from the Katha Upanishads, 2.13, in the Svetashvatara Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam Yo Vididati Kamam. He is the one supreme being among all eternal beings, and the one supreme conscious being among all conscious beings. He alone is fulfilling the desires of everyone. The statement from the Vedas accepts variegatedness within the eternally existing substance, Vastu Brahman. It separates the Shakti, potency, and Shakti Mad, possessor of the potency, and then it considers his Gyan, Bala, and Kriya. So everything is Brahman, but God has energies that are not different from him. They are God. They are the body of God. But God is not. They're the body of God, but God is not that body. God is not that aspect. He's more than that aspect. So the parts can be considered the whole, but they can also be considered different from the whole. I have a computer here. You can point to, you know, the keyboards. What is that? It's my computer. You can point to the screen. What is that? My computer. You can point to the cord. What is that? My computer. But the cord is not the computer. The screen is not the computer. They're parts of the computer, simultaneously one and different. So then he goes on to the next verse. Let us consider the second Mahavakya, Prajnana Brahma, the supreme knowledge is Brahman. Atharva Upanishads 1.5.3. Here it is said that Brahman and consciousness are identical. The word Prajnanam, which is which in this sentence is said to be one with Brahman, is also used in the Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad, where it is used to mean prema bhakti. Tam eva dhiro vigyaya prajnanam kuvita brahmana. With a steady and sober person attains knowledge of Brahman, he worships him with genuine loving feelings. Jnana suru prema bhakti. So what he's saying, this vakya, this mahavakya, prajnanam brahma, which can be translated, the supreme knowledge is Brahman, but here the reference is, the supreme knowledge is prema bhakti. It's love of God. So there's a distinction. So Babaji Maharaj is taking each of the Mahavakyas and explaining them. The third Mahavakya is Tattvam Asi Svetakato. Svetakato, you are that. This shloka gives instructions on oneness with Brahman, which is more elaborately described in Brihat Aranyaka Upanishads as follows. O Gargi, those who leave this material world without understanding the eternal Vishnu or Kripana, extremely miserly or degraded, whereas those who leave this material world in knowledge of that supreme eternal are actually Brahmanas, knowers of Brahman. The word tat Tvam asi, tvam asi, means he who gains true knowledge eventually attains devotional service to Parabrahman, to God. You are that is translated in Mayavadis, but this other way of translating it means you are that, meaning that you who gain that knowledge. One who gains knowledge, then you attain that devotional service to Parabrahman. And he is be known as Brahman. The first Mahavakya is Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Brihat Aranyaka Upanishads. If the vidya that is established in this Vakya does not become bhakti in the end, then it is thoroughly condemned in Sri Upanishads, who says, Adam tama pravishyanti ye vijam upasate tato bhuya ivate tomo yo uvijayanam brata. Those who are situated in ignorance enter deep darkness. Those who are still in knowledge enter deeper in darkness. This mantra means that those who embrace ignorance and do not know the spiritual nature of the soul enter the darkest region of ignorance. However, the destination of those who reject ignorance, but who believe that the jiva is Brahman and not a spiritual atom, is far worse. So I am Brahman means that I am spiritual. It doesn't mean that I am God. It means I am God-like. I am spiritual. We'll finish this paragraph. Baba, the Vedas have no shoreline and are unsurpassed. Their precise meaning can only be understood by studying each and every shloka of the Upanishads separately and by deriving the meaning from all them combined. If one singles out a particular sentence, he may always be diverted by some misinterpretation. But taking them out of context and defining them out of context, you get the wrong meaning. So what he's saying is Shankaracharya went through the Vedas and selected things out of context that could be misunderstood to support his theory. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore investigated all the Vedas thoroughly and then preached that the individual souls and the material world are simultaneously and inconceivably one and different from Sri Hari and different from him. But you know, I understand that the Vedas establish the teaching to Achintya Beda Beda Tapta. Will you explain this more clearly with proofs from the Vedas themselves? Here are some of the many passages that describe the oneness aspect a beta cut for a beta-beta cut. So simultaneously one in difference. So here's the ones that describe oneness. Sarvam kalabidam ramah. Chandogya Upanishads 3.14.1. Everything in this world is certainly Brahman. Atmavedam Savam Iti. Everything that is visible is spiritual. Is spirit, Atma. So this is all oneness. The Eva Somyadam Agrahashit Ekam Evati Tvam. O gentle one, this world initially existed in a non-dual spiritual form. Before the manifestation of this universe, the Supreme Spirit was just a non-dual substance. And Eva Sadevo Bhagavan Varenyo Yoni Svabhavam Adishtatyaka Vaisishvatara Upanishad. Bhagavan himself is the master of all, even of the devatas, and he is the only one who is worthy of worship. He is the cause of all causes, but he himself remains unaltered, just as the sun remains stationary while spreading its rays in all directions. Now listen to the mantras that support Veda. Difference. You take it out of context, you can get sameness, but there's also difference. So they must be the same and different at the same time. So Om Brahmavid Apnoti Param Tattariya Upanishads 2.1. One who understands Brahman attains Parabrahman. Mahantam vibhum atmanam matpadiro nasochiti Kattu Upanishads 1.2.22. A sober, intelligent person does not lament, even on seeing a soul confined in material body, because he knows that the soul is great and present everywhere. The difference. Satyam jnanam anantam brahma yo veda nihitam. First anucheda of tattatiya brahma nanivali. Brahman is truth, knowledge, and eternity personified. The Brahman is situated in the spiritual sky, paravyoma, and is also present in the depths of all living entities' hearts. One who knows this attains siddhi through his relationship. So he's saying it's situated in the spiritual world. It's also in God's heart. So there's a difference. One who knows this attains siddhi through his relationship with that indwelling super soul. And anyway, there's many more verses. I'm going to have to stop now. Anyone like to ask any questions? Anybody like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Thank you, Gail. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to have to end for today. I got to do some things. Thank you very much. Vanshikopa.